And hi there, friends. This is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind with Ben and Julian.
Hey there. Glad to be here, as usual.
Hello, everybody.
We are part of the team. Part of the team down here at the station, down at our version of the station, which is a satellite station. But we're also a family. Even though Julian and I are blood family, Ben is family also. And then come the other people in the office here. I wonder if they know that we're Audrey's family, right? Aura is family, right? Everybody's family. So family is something that's a beautiful thing. So a man came to me recently, and he saw that a woman and her family were functioning so dysfunctionally. They were doing such bad dysfunction. They were fighting each other so hard, all about deception. In this family, all of the people of the family perceived that the woman, who is a person I knew, never gets angry and is never upset. Meanwhile, she tells her husband how upset she is and how angry she is at her family. So the family is functioning from a place of denial. He, the husband, said, well, we got to set this straight. You know what I mean? It feels so bad to your family. You got to talk to your family. And she said, well, I will talk to them. And then she talks to them, and they still do things that offend her, and so much, such kind of stuff that offends her and offends him. They bring him stories about how she was talking about how bad she is or how nasty she is with the kids. And he hears stories about it, and he hears people gossiping about his wife. So he's all very confused. So what does he do? He decides to shortcut it by going to the family itself. And he tells the family, what's the matter with you people? Why don't you straighten it all out? Well, they quickly X'd him out of the picture. They got rid of him. And not now. And so we learned something. The thing we learned is that you can never try to separate someone from their family and the family that they know. In other words, if they have a bond with their family, they want to have that bond now. And you can't break them from that bond. So you can't separate a person from their family by offering truth in the middle. Because for some reason or other, if you belong to something, even if it's a dysfunctional thing, you want to defend that belonging. So what is this need to belong?
Well, I think about the example that you just gave about how people don't want to be separated from their family. And I hear the story that you're saying in a literal sense, but I also see it figuratively. So the family that someone may not want to be separated from could be a workplace culture, or a sports team. People identify with that as a group.
Keep it in family for a minute. Before you go outside of that, what about family? What about you and your family, right? Julian, you and I are part of the same family, right?
Yeah.
People within our family are pretty dysfunctional.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely our family's sort of split into groups of different people who've just decided that we enjoy each other's company.
In different ways.
Yeah, exactly, in different ways, yeah.
But if anybody did something to harm anybody in the family, the whole family would unite.
Right. They, you know, email chains and all kinds of communication.
And weapons.
We bond together. Weapons.
I mean, this is it.
Bring out the weapons. Bring out the wooden spoon.
Right. So what they would do is they would fight to defend the group because they're part of the group. So what family are you a part of is a question. How do you feel about you and your parents? I wish we had our phone in today, but we don't. It's not working. But we'll get it fixed. I wish we had a way of getting to you today, but what part of a family do you belong to? And now, Ben, what you're saying, the extended family.
Sure. Well, I think there's groups that we all identify with, and sure, we start with the blood family. That's our first introduction to being part of a group as we're growing up. You know, we have our immediate family, our extended family with cousins, but as we get older, we move into new groups and new families. Maybe it's the group of friends that we make at school early on. And later, maybe it's a sports team that we identify with, and we identify with the other people who are behind that team. And then later in life, it's maybe a college or university that we attend, or a job that we work at, and we become part of a workplace culture, and that becomes a family of its own. And I think behind it all is this impulse, like you said earlier, to belong to a group and to feel a part of a greater collective. And I think we derive a lot of our identity through that.
We saw a lot of that during the soccer matches, the World Cup.
Absolutely.
Right? Imagine being Brazil. It's like where you are completely identified with the team itself.
Right. And there's a dual sort of identity going on there, because the team, it's not just a sporting entity, but it's also a national identity and a cultural identity. And it's all wrapped into one thing that's expressed in a 90-minute game against another identity. So I think it's interesting that, you know, when we look at something like the Maslow hierarchy of needs, which is a psychological theory that describes what people need to become a self-actualized person, to become a sort of fulfilled, realized human being. The most basic needs, of course, are survival needs. So the most basic of the hierarchy is your biological and physiological needs, things like...
So Maslow says we all have needs, but the most important needs are the biological and physiological needs, because otherwise you're not going to grow up.
Right. If you don't eat, then you're not going to be able to fulfill any of your more complex needs, because that's the most pressing need, is to eat. So that's his most basic need.
Well, the most basic needs, very specifically, are air, because you have to breathe oxygen.
Of course.
Okay, but I know he's saying of course, but you know you're not mentioning it.
Okay, you're right.
Air, food, drink, shelter. Shelter is a very important need. Warmth is an important need. Now, warmth is a need that's often overlooked, but not so overlooked this past winter, especially around New York, when it was just everywhere that there was an air leak, you could feel it. And the coldness that usually you could temper and you could survive, people would just hunt for any kind of warmth. People would get in cars just to feel the car warmth.
It's been like a little ice age here.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's been a real surprise. But it's a kind of ice that kind of gets through you, and you never realize your need for warmth. You don't get it, especially if you're young. You don't. Who needs to be warm? Well, whew, right? Cold feet, right? What that feels like. So cold, warmth. What do you think the other two needs are, my friends? What do you think they are? Think about it. I've mentioned so far air, you need oxygen, you need food, you need to drink, you got to have water, shelter, warmth. What else do you think? Sex. Why do we need sex? Because what came along with the entire organism is the need to perpetuate the species. You've got to keep it going. See, your job, and in fact, the very reason we give you air, food, drink, shelter, and warmth is so that you will spill your seed and propagate, so that somebody will continue. This is the way we're going to continue the thing. The flowers do it. The birds do it. Everybody does it. It's just we're going to give you air. We're going to give you food. We're going to give you something to drink, give you a little shelter, keep it a little warm, and then we'll give you sex. In fact, sex kind of goes along with the warmth. See, if you're going to have sex, you're going to get warmth. If you're going to have sex, you should have shelter, right? A couple of drinks, a little sandwich, and something to breathe, and it might work best.
And then the final need of those most basic needs comes right after that.
Right after that, which is sleep. So we need you to rest to repair your organism. So let's talk about the basic biological and physiological needs: air, food, drink, shelter, warmth, sex, and sleep. Now think about that, friends. That's your drive. That's what keeps you going.
That's literally what keeps you alive.
That's right. Sleep. You don't have the sleep, you know what could happen to you, right? You get knocked out. Warmth, you know what happens to you. So sex helps get you to both the sleep, the shelter, the warmth, air, food, drink. So these are the first needs according to Maslow. And this is a very interesting thing to consider. Let's look at his safety needs, the second needs.
So this would be the next level. Once we have the most fundamental things required for our survival to live to see the next day, we need protection from the elements. We need security, order, law and order, stability, and the freedom from fear.
Okay, so let's back that up. These are called safety needs. So he says you got your first needs, which are biological and physiological. Now comes your safety needs. Protection from the elements. Now, we can call this all under shelter, but shelter is not good enough. You got to be protected from the elements. What does that mean? What elements?
The wind and the rain and the cold snow and the ice falling out of the sky.
And the predators out there, too. I mean, anything that basically is telling you that you can't live. I mean, it's always like you say, Armand, eat or be eaten, right?
So something wants to eat you, right? And you want to be protected from the elements. But including in the elements are not only predators that want to eat you, but there's also overrain, right? Mm-hmm. The sun. You have to be protected from the sun. So on your safety needs, you have the protection from the elements. Then you have this idea of order. Order. How does order relate to safety?
Well, I think predictability and routine are something that many animals crave, including us. I mean, we want things to be sort of safe in an order that we can predict.
Well, prediction is very important.
Yeah.
Because if I could predict what you're going to be doing, I could therefore tell if you should be eaten, not be eaten, if you're going to be safe, if you're going to be attacking me. So I, as an animal, want to be able to predict your potential behavior. So therefore, order becomes important. And I also want to know where I stored my cheese. I want to know where I put my food, where I hung it out, where I put it. I want it to stay there. I don't want somebody picking it up and moving it around. Law is important. Among the stability, the safety needs, is a need for law. There must be some rules. What do you think, Julian? How does law play into safety needs?
I mean, law is one of those safety needs because it represents a sort of part of that order that we expect. We expect to walk outside of our home and not be murdered or not be mugged or not be beaten or stolen from. These are sort of, it stops the chaos from, affecting your survival ability. I think law represents the walls that we kind of create, you know.
So there's an agreed-upon law.
Right.
Right? It could be Sicilian law. It could be very different than Jamaican law.
Right.
Well, very different than Jamaican law, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a very important word that you use, the agreed-upon law, because mm-hmm. it is a sort of implicit societal agreement that we have with others, with the world. We almost make this agreement with the world that we are not going to act a certain way because we don't want others acting that way towards us. Now, of course, it doesn't always work out like exactly how we would like it to, but the idea that there's this agreement that it's almost a societal agreement that, hey, I'm going to live my life. I'm not going to meddle or interfere with you violently or otherwise, and you do the same for me.
So if I walk out of my apartment or I walk out of my house and I keep my door open, well, then I may be inviting something. If I have my door shut, we have law number one, do not cross this a shut door. But if I don't have my door locked, and you could say, well, I knocked and there was no answer, so I came in. So I'm going to put a lock on my door. See, now, if I'm going to put a lock on my door, I'm going to put a secure lock on my door, and therefore I am now making part of law. You should not go into a locked door. But if it's an open door, I can't blame you too much. Well, you left your wallet on the table. What'd you expect the guy to do when he came in to deliver the groceries? Right? So the law is flexible, but the law does get specific. It also says you shouldn't hurt people who are there if they're not defended. Right? You shouldn't hurt people, and you should not. It's basically all the rules, just in different levels in different places. So I am sure parts of Brooklyn where you have very different rules that you do than in Manhattan, you know, going around the neighborhood.
So with this hierarchy of needs, where does it become? Because it starts to feel like it's turning into things that we want to just feel good in our lives. When does it change from survival, survival needs to survival wants?
You're in the safety needs, and in the last of the safety needs comes to write that, Julian. It comes to the freedom from fear. I have a need to not be afraid. Now, there are certain people I know who are afraid all the time. They can't help it. It's part of their characteristic. They're sixes in the Enneagram. That's the way they are. Their job was to be afraid. There's a group of people who do nothing but feel fear. And the reason they feel fear is because they were meant to. They were meant to be the ones who were going to be outside the troop looking to see if there was any danger for the other animals. You might be one of those people, somebody listening. You might be afraid all the time. But if you're afraid, this is the kind of thing that happens to you. You know, you feel fear. Freedom from fear is having as many guarantees as possible that you don't have to be afraid. So we've gone over two of the needs. The first being the biological and physiological needs, which are air, food, drink, shelter, warmth, sex, and sleep. The second is the safety needs. Protection from the elements, security, order, law, stability, freedom from fear. We're going to be taking a short break in just about 3 minutes. This is Armand DeMille with Julian Joiello and Ben Starr. We have been we just got here in time to help out, but the reason we're helping out is for a reason. We're still in our fund drive. We're at the tail end of picking up what we were trying to do here at WBAI, which is to raise the money to pay the rent. So we are going to offer our premium, and the only premium we have left is the one. For $200 donation, just a $200 donation, you can get a one-time meeting with me personally. I offer this to WBAI. At 212-757-4488.
212-757-4488. Now, that number is not our call-in number, but in fact the number to donate here at the Positive Mind and WBAI during this tail end of our fund drive. So call 212-757-4488. To donate for this, if you have money to donate for WBAI, you can donate less than $200, more than $200. We appreciate everything you can, and it's tax deductible here. And we want to end the fund drive, so we need that donation to really move forward with the programming and continue what we love to do here and continue bringing you what you love to listen to.
We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends. We'll be right back.
Call 212-757-4488 to donate here at The Positive Mind and WBAI. 212-757-4488.
Nobody said anything about the need for good music, you know?
Yeah, and that was The Last Tango in Paris by Gotant Project.
And nobody's talked up the need for the last tango. God, I hope I have a last tango. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I have got this beautiful, beautiful group of people that I work with, Ben and Julian, and we create for you. Through the good willingness of WBAI radio station, WBAI, 99.5 FM, every other, we're with you Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. We'll be with you next Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. and thereafter. This week, we're with you just today, Wednesday, from 1 to 2 o'clock, because we're still trying to ask you to dig deep, 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 deep in your pockets, right where Zuzu's pedals would be. Find those little extra pennies that you may be able to send to us by calling 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. A simple donation of anything, $20, $50, $100, $200, you get a meeting with me or Julian or Ben. Now, you may have listened to Ben enough to say, you know, I think I'll meet with that guy because he knows some stuff. Or Julian, phew. People pay fortunes to meet with him. He's a good guy to talk to. Anybody you want to consult to, the three of us, we offer ourselves out to you. 212-757-4488. You know, Amy Goodman does it too, and she does it. She gets $2,000, you know, for a meeting with her. But it's a more extensive. She has dinner with you. She serves dinner. You sit around. You have a real casual time with us. With me, it's a one-time meeting, because if I did dinners, I'd just get too fat. All right, now here, we're talking about the hierarchy of needs, and we're talking about the hierarchy of needs. We're talking about what people need. They need to belong to something. That's the basis. The basis of it, we talked about, if you looked at it according to Maslow says you have basic physiological and psychological needs.
And the reason that we brought this whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs into the conversation is that we started the program discussing family and groups and being a part of a group and being a part of a family and how your family isn't always necessarily going to be your blood family. Like, we can identify with many separate groups, and that can sort of piecemeal our own identity. And the third level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs is the needs of love and belongingness. And that includes things like friendship, things like intimacy, things like being part of a group which is either comprised of family or friends or colleagues. It also includes romantic relationships. But this is really interesting to me, Armand, because this is the first need that Maslow lists that goes beyond our most basic needs that are biological or safety related.
Well, I'm not sure now, does it? Because if you think about shelter, warmth, sex, sleep, they kind of all go along with the need of belongingness as well. Because if you figure it, you're with a family and you have a family, you could feel a warmth just from the collective nature of it. You know, people laying next to each other in the cold get warm. And then affection, love, and romantic relationship, if you lay in the arms of somebody you care for and you hold them real tight, it's as good a family as you're going to get. Especially if you're not talking too much. You know, especially if you're not complaining and you don't have a wooden spoon. Pardon the expression.
So, I mean, it just from my perspective, I think the notion that Maslow lists love and belongingness right after his rudimentary sort of biological and safety needs, I think it sort of paints an interesting picture of where we go as people when we're seeking to build our identities. And this is what it speaks to me, is that it's about crafting our identity. And we all want to have a sense of our place in the world. I think everyone wants to have a sort of understanding of their role and how they figure into the world around them. And being part of a group is a very effective way to gain that sense of identity and purpose.
You know, it's a terrible feeling. Somebody said to me once that they had a break with WBAI because of something that happened on some other program somewhere. And they just had to figure that we were like one anti-Semitic group or something like that. They had us identified and they broke with us and they said it broke their heart because the station meant so much to them. And the station means so much to so many people. So there is a belonging nature that you get listening to WBAI. You know, and I'm sure you're tired of hearing certain things, premiums being offered, so on and so forth, which we do every third month or every second month, I hear nowadays. But the belonging to the station is amazing. I got a letter from London today saying, hey, where are the podcasts? You haven't heard any podcasts for the last couple of weeks because we do not put these on podcasts because of the fund drive. But we have a regular listener from Ireland, right? She's there all the time. I have another listener from another one from England, one from France, one from Italy.
Mexico.
Taiwan.
Yeah. You got a few from France, Armand, because yeah. I've told my family over there that I've been a part of this, and several of them have subscribed. So I know we got at least a handful over there.
Yeah. So here, this is part of the family gets bigger. And the family gets bigger, which is an interesting thing. If you think about the electronic network, you think about social media, you know, Julian?
Yeah.
How has the family of BAI become part of the social media, which has increased the nature of the family?
Yeah, it's very interesting how a lot of the time in modern times, people are able to find family in places that are not even physically accessible. I mean, just for example, our Positive Mind page on Facebook represents about 1,400 people who communicate with each other, and it's mostly in between each other. They post a lot, comment on things, comment on the program, and they find family in that. I mean, there's people, forums. If anybody's used the website Reddit, which is one of the most popular websites out there, it has a forum for any kind of person, communities of professional photographers, of professional painters, of people that love cars and fixing cars. There's a fixing car forum, and they have hundreds of thousands of people who go there every day and find family in that. And it's a really interesting notion because it's something that didn't really exist before the internet.
Absolutely. I think that's the most incredible thing about the internet and in terms of what it's done for society at large, is that it's brought people so close together from all parts of the world.
Right. And I wonder, do you think that maybe the people that that don't find family, maybe in their actual family, maybe sometimes turn to this instead?
I'm sure. And I hope they do it with satisfaction. But you're right, Julian. You're looking for it anywhere you can get. And it's very hard to get it when you get it to a place that is not in harmony with your belief system, mm-hmm. or who speaks badly, you know?
Right. I mean, and that's another characteristic of a lot of these forums. If they love something very strongly, it's a very supportive place. People will post questions and have their questions answered by people that they would definitely consider as friends. And I've even heard about people who've gotten married over internet relationships through forums and through boards and all kinds of communities. It's really
so what
really
you get through WBAI, and I know I get it when I listen to Amy in the morning, the first thing I get is my family talking, you know. There's my family bringing me information, and they're bringing me the right information. Now, the trouble is if your family brings you wrong information, not because your family wants to give you misinformation, but because they think that their information is right. Like I remember during the Vietnam War, I remember the hard hats who believed, truly, truly believed that the Vietnam War was correct, was the right thing to do, and that to oppose it was criminal. So they would be willing to kill a hippie who would be saying, you know, burn your draft cards, because they knew the hippie was wrong. And I would ask, why? Why do you believe this? They would say, because this is what my family believes. My family were all Marines. And if they fought for their country, right, then therefore we have a right to declare what's right for our country, including killing you if you disagree with us.
Yeah, and it's interesting, personally, in your family. I mean, I know that, like, growing up, your parents sometimes will tell you things that you believe. Just they're your parents, and you believe that, like, for example, this was a small one for me, and it was to teach me not to watch television too much. And my father told me that my vision would get worse, and I would, you know, start seeing TVs everywhere growing up. And I thought it was real for so long, much longer than I should have. You know what I mean? Like, you know, till I was 12 or 13. And it's that weird realization when you're like, that's not a true thing. This isn't a fact. And it's so assumed, you know, and it's...
Is that as bad as play with it and it's going to fall off?
Right, yeah, or if you right, something like that.
If
you know,
make
it's
a face,
sort of,
it'll stick like that?
Yeah, it's understood that eventually I'd figure out the truth about that, but it's a weird realization being the child in that relationship and having something where you trust this person wholeheartedly. And even if it's something very strange that doesn't really make sense, it affects your trust.
Wonderful collection that would be. Would you send me a collection of things you were taught as a child that maybe didn't turn out to be true, but the way they scared you, and send those to Armand, ARMAND, at thepositivemind.com. I would love to hear the different things that were said to children to believe. I mean, Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, right? Those are
right,
supposedly
exactly.
Benign.
And it's a big deal for a lot of kids when they find out that Santa's not real. It's like a really big, crushing moment for some children.
What do you mean not real? Yeah, what are you talking about?
Are you saying that Santa is not...
Saying? What's he saying?
I don't know.
What's he talking about?
That sounds like nonsense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I know in Asian culture, there's a lot of superstition. And it's people believe it for their entire lives sometimes. Certain superstitions that, you know, like... I know that there's one in hotel rooms. You need to knock on the door before you go in, your own hotel room, just because there might be a ghost. And it's like it's understood, and that's something that you're taught by your family. And it's just interesting to have those sort of things from your family and then eventually learn about them later.
So I'd be curious to hear from the two of you, Armand and Julian, what families or groups do you feel a part of? Do you feel connected to?
Oh, okay. I feel connected to the station. I'd say is big. The people I work with is big. A few friends. That's another. A few very intimate friends. You guys, of course, here in the station, here in the doing the radio. You, Ben, Julian, for sure. Italy. I feel a connection to Italy.
I know what you mean, especially Sicily. Going to Sicily, it's like you feel like you're... When I went to the beach in Sicily, it was like, I was like, these are people, man. This is the people, I'm my people, you know? And it fit right in. It's really, really interesting how that happens.
So something about that feels organically right, but New York and New Yorkers, boy, that feels absolutely right.
That's a big one for me, too.
Walking through the subway or something like that, it's sort of like you just know how everything goes.
When they did that movie, you know, the movie Home?
Yeah.
Where you can see it if you look on YouTube and you put my name in, you'll see a little catch of my doing my part of Home, where they connected me to other famous New Yorkers. And I heard my replay of me talking about New York. I said, wow, that's really, it's really a feeling I have. So I would say home. I would say that. What else would I think of? You know, you should be able to pull that clip up, the one that talks. It was the number two clip. And I would say God. Yeah, I would say God. I would say by God, I mean my existential consciousness, my connection to the universe. I would say that's my biggest family.
Yeah, I mean, I would say definitely this room right now, you, Ben, and Armand, this is a family. This is a sort of spot every week. I'm here, stability, the security, the belonging, for sure. My apartment, actually, in the East Village is definitely a beginning family. I have two roommates close to my age, two guys, a cat, and, you know, an apartment I've lived in for about 3 years, and it's really becoming a place of stability and family. And
I saw that. I saw that with you and Charlie. I met Charlie just the other day.
And Charlie's my roommate.
Yeah. Charlie's 20 years old and Julian's 22. And Charlie's sitting over at my place with Julian, and I realize that they're roommates together and they talk like family. They relate like family. It's a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, actually, I got that clip that you just mentioned.
Is it the one about...
This is about New York.
Does New York have a rhythm? Let's see what this sounds like. Right? I once went to Hawaii, and I said... this is about the noise, but you can play it. I slept outdoors in Hawaii, and I heard more noise than I ever heard anywhere in the world between birds and screaming animals and stuff like that. I was out in a tent, and I said, geez, give me the quiet of New York. Because it was such a remarkable, loud sound that was different than what I was used to. So I think New York is different that way. I think it's a remarkable city. I think it's as crazy as any other city. I think people are as nuts as they are anywhere else in the world in different kind of ways. It would be nice if it were more peaceful, but then it wouldn't be New York. You know, it would be a different place. We'd be in Iowa. Hey, it's 212-757-4488. No, the other clip was the one about the rhythm, which might have been the first or third. See if you find it. Go ahead, wait here. There is such an exciting flow of people. Everybody kind of passes by, unconscious of you, but carrying themselves with them. They have everything inside them, from their anger to their despair, to their hopes, to their rushing, to their tiredness. It's beautiful.
And there's one more. We might as well do it, right?
I'm sure it's going to be the last one. Go ahead. When the people get to New York, they're immediately hit with this incredible pulse and energy of the city. New York has a rhythm, a pulse, a tension to it. You have to ride that rhythm one way or another. You could ride underneath it, and you could say, well, I'll just go at half the time of everybody else. You could go on top of it, or you could go in the rhythm of it. If you don't hit the rhythm, New York eats you, chews you up, and spits you out. And you go away saying, I hate that city. I can't stand it. I would never want to live there. But on the other hand, if you do get into step, it's quite a dance. This is Armando. That's so cute.
It is a great description.
Yeah, I love that.
You know, all of us being New Yorkers from growing up here, it's really...
So New York is another place, and you feel like a New Yorker, huh, Julian?
Yeah.
You feel like a Stuyvetownese?
Stuyvetownese. yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up downtown east side Manhattan, but I went to school all over, public schools, and took the subway since I was a tiny kid.
A Stuyvestani?
Stuyvestani, yeah, sure. We can say that. But yeah, I mean, and also now I live in the East Village, and I feel like I'm growing to love that too.
Well, let me ask you this about it. I mean, this is going to sound a little, since we're still asking people to raise money by calling 212-757-4488 to make any size donation just to get the phone ringing. We have Audrey standing by, ready to take your calls. You feel part of the subway world? Do you feel part of the subway family?
Yeah, you know, there's
it's a remarkable family, the subway.
It is, because there's people you actually see over and over, and not, I mean, there's, for example, I remember going to high school for 4 years and seeing the same man in the L train tunnel on the way to the 1 train playing Beatles songs, and I watched his growth as an artist. I watched his singing, like at first, you know, he was charismatic, but his musicality wasn't that great. And I watched over 4 years him grow to be a very decent musician. And it's interesting seeing that and feeling safety in that and belonging in walking down this tunnel and seeing the same person or the same train or hearing the same stop.
What about the Showtime kids? You ever seen them?
The Showtime kids? Which one?
They get on the train and they have a dance routine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean,
you know,
yeah,
with the music.
Course.
It's. I mean, a lot of people get annoyed by that, but I always love to see those kids.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and coming up to this radio show, I mean, every time I come up to our studio here, I see the doo-wop on the N&R trains coming up, and it represents definitely a kind of family, especially something in New York, and people get a sort of anxiety sometimes from performers like that, and it just gives me a absolute kind of safety and belonging.
You know, one of the remarkable things to do on a subway, whenever you're in a subway and there's not room for one more person, and you're squeezing in there, you're squeezing in there, you're squeezing in there. If somebody says, hey, give me a break, right? Would you all give me a break? You can see people actually let go of their breath. They breathe out and it becomes more room. People were holding their breath to make their bodies bigger so that they could have enough room for the future. You ask them to let go of a little breath, and they do, and they make room for you. Kind of a remarkable thing, I guess, like a group of fish.
That is, yeah.
You know, you see that happen. So this is New York. This is Armand DeMille. This is The Positive Mind. This is the last of our fun drive. We are going to be asking you one more time to make your call, and then we will pick up this subject next Tuesday. We're going to pick up the subject about the hierarchy of needs. We're going to talk about the different needs that people have. And hopefully by then we'll be able to take your calls. If not, we will just, we won't take your calls. But I think we will be able to have this fixed by then.
And you could tweet us too, at Armand DeMille on Twitter.
DIMELE is the last name. Tweet on Armand, ArmandDIMELE. On Twitter.
Yeah, and this being the tail end of the fun drive, if you want to have this consultation, this meeting with Armand, make sure to call in right now because we'll have the phones open for the next 5 to 10 minutes. And make sure to call in and make those donations, a $200 donation. And as a gift, you'll have this meeting with Armand scheduled within the next couple weeks. And it's a really, really unique thing. And it's we're not offering it anytime after this. So it's a special offer. It's half the price that it usually is, and all of that money goes tax-deductible to WBAI. So 212-757-4488 is that number. Make sure to call 212-757-4488.
And make sure to call soon because Armand is the hardest-working man on 57th Street, so the sooner you could schedule that with him, the better.
212, my friends, thank you very much. Please make your calls right now. 212-757-4488. My special thanks to the engineers at WBAI who helped us work with our little misconnection today. Terrific for getting us on air for you. They're just amazing. Amazing over there. 212-757-4488. We're going to be giving you some music, and then we will be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. Don't always share.